Senate Finance will come to order. Welcome Senator Hoffman, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green. Just a reminder, the capital budget will be before us at 5 p.m. It's been postponed till 5 p.m. We had some difficulties getting the document all together and back over to drafting. And so, and then Senate Bill 160, which was actually first on our list after that, will hold until Senator Bundy, the sponsor of the bill, comes back. And House Bill 500. Is anyone in there? Oh, Ben. Okay, thank you. We'll take a brief of these, please. on the record? Please, join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Bill Stoltz. House Bill 500 was introduced on behalf of the Mat-Su Borough by Representative Stoltz, who, by their request, is willing to take this next step for them to look at this project. What House Bill 500 does is two things. Expands the scope of the funding to not just only phase one of a ski resort, but to developing Hatcher Pass as a whole, and increasing the bonding and other financing that they can look at through ADA from $15 million to $25 million. I have with me Jim McMillan from ADA, if anyone has any questions regarding that the financing process. But in the end, Representative Stoltz, on the behalf of the Mat-Su Borough, realized that in order to look at this project further, they needed this next step. If there are any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? We have John Duffy from the Mat-Su Borough and Dave Germer from JL Properties online also, and I know they can answer questions as well. And so this just development of, and then just changes the amount, gives the ceiling, makes the ceiling open.
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, John Duffy, are you online?
I certainly am, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I thought you were supposed to be down here.
Oh, I'm next week.
Okay, we'll look forward to it. Okay, go ahead and if you'd give your name and who you represent and your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is John Duffy. I'm the borough manager for the Matanuska Assistant Borough. I'd like to thank the chair and committee members for bringing this legislation before the committee for consideration. The borough is in support of House Bill 500. We believe it is necessary for ADA to have this authority because their participation is critical to the success of the public-private partnership that is proposed at Hatcher Pass. The Hatcher Pass project is a long-standing economic development effort of the borough. It will allow the borough to work with the private sector to develop this long-standing effort, fulfill the goal of the borough's economic development plan, as well as fulfill the objectives of the municipal entitlement program by providing for economic development, diversification of our tax base, and enhancing recreation opportunities. The borough and the state have already used funds for infrastructure improvements, and I'd like to thank the chair, Senator Green, for assisting in the funding to provide electrical power to the site. We have funded geotechnical and hydrological studies, and the project is also a very strong cooperative effort between the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Lands and State Parks in the borough. This project allows the borough to move forward with a more regionally significant effort. We have also completed an economic impact assessment of the proposed project. The economic impact assessment was completed by Northern Economics, which identified the Hatcher Pass project would create approximately 1,500 jobs and have a construction cost estimate of approximately $41 million. To sum up, borough supports ADA's ability to participate in the project. We support House Bill 500 to achieve the long-term goal of the borough, will create numerous long-term jobs, and fulfill the goals of the municipal entitlement program. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and available for questions.
Are there any questions for John Duffy, borough manager? Answered. Thank you, John. Then Dave Germer.
Senator Green, Senate Finance members, my name is David Germer. I'm JL Properties project manager. To give you a little background concerning the Hatcher Pass project, in October 2003, JL Properties responded to a borough solicitation to develop an alpine and Nordic ski area at Hatcher Pass. And then over a two-year period, JL and a team of Campic consultants have worked with the borough to develop a very preliminary project scope as well as financial plan. And these plans basically meet the borough's goals of developing the Nordic and Alpine ski areas. And the development plan basically consists of three integrated pieces. These pieces are an Alpine ski area, a residential community, and a Nordic ski area and trail system. And we believe that all the components of the project need to be integrated for each separate piece to succeed. Development of a financing plan for this particular project has been quite challenging. The preliminary finance plan provides a unique blend of public and private finance. ADA's participation is an integral part of this financing plan. As such, we're requesting passage of this legislation that increases ADA's authorization to fund the project from $15 million to $25 million. As Mr. Mulligan indicated, the next step is for ADA, the borough, and JL to do detailed due diligence analysis of the financial feasibility of the project. Each entity would conduct its own due diligence analysis. We'd like to begin this work this summer, and after due diligence and assuming financial feasibilities, ADA's board would need to approve the financing plan before the financing can take place. We're hopeful that construction could begin as early as the spring of 2008. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Are there any questions for Dave Gurman? Mr. McMillan, did you have anything that you would like
Madam to Chair, for the record, my name is Jim McMillan. I'm Deputy Director of Credit and Business Development for ADA. ADA is in support of House Bill number 500. And to reiterate a couple points that were made by David Germer, first of all, AS 4488 requires legislative authority if ADA is going to enter into a development finance project where we intend to issue in excess of $10 million worth of bonds. The passage of this bill does not ensure or guarantee financing. What it does is kick off the process so that ADA can conduct its due diligence, determine the feasibility. During that feasibility work, we will look at the technical, operational, and financial aspects and determine the risk of each and look for ways to mitigate that risk. And if we determine that the project is feasible, at that time, a finance plan will be presented to ADA's Board of Directors for approval. We, as some committee members may know, ADA has been associated with this project for many years, has been involved in many studies regarding development of the Hatcher Pass ski area. None of them have come to fruition. We felt that the timing was right, the plan was right, and the developer was right. And we also felt that the public-private partnership of the Mat-Su Borough, ADA, and the private developer was the best way to move forward. So the conceptual plan is one that we felt was worthy of our consideration. I'm available for any questions, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions for Mr. McMillan? I did want to notice the last sentence on the fiscal note. This bond authorization has no fiscal impact on ADA operations. And
Madam Chair, that is correct. This bill does not, because it is merely the authorization to move forward with the feasibility work. If the project moves forward and is actually financed, then there will be, of course, additional receipts to ADA, which could be used for operations, dividend, and so forth. But just the passage of this bill, it does not have any fiscal impact.
This just raises the ceiling and
yes, Madam Chair.
Development instead of.
Yes.
Are there any questions about this? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure who to ask this question of, but what's the reason that it went from $15 million to $25 million, which is almost double the amount?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the original bill was passed back in 1998. It was a different developer. It was Hatcher Pass Development Corporation, a gentleman by the name of Greg Romack. And as the description is also changing, back then it was only phase one. It was only the alpine ski area that was being developed, and that was about a $20 million plus dollar project. The project today is much more expansive and comprehensive, as David Germer indicated earlier, combining alpine, Nordic, and a residential development area. And the total project cost is approximately $42 million. So therefore, thus the reason for the increase in the portion that ADA would be looking at.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? I know this has been kind of interesting one to follow because of the partnership. It's a little different than not many of them, and the folks are coming to the table and willing to have quite a lot at risk as well. So, any questions on this legislation? Does anyone desire to hold this legislation? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 500 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
There being no objection, House Bill 500 moves in committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal notes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Brief at ease. Morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman.
Excuse me. Right ahead.
For the record, my name is Mike O'Hare, staff to Representative Cott, and before you is a blank CS for HB 283, as well as a title change resolution, Madam Chairman.
We're distributing the CS. We weren't sure which we were going with this morning. Okay, thank you. Okay, it's been distributed, and I'll move CS for House Bill 283, version F, for explanation, and object for further conversation. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The change in the CS from the previous version of House Bill 283 adds a new Section 2, which amends S 4204020 subsection F regarding the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and removes the previous monthly salary schedule, range 26, step C for Commissioner 2, and the chairman removes range 27, step C salary schedule to have the salary schedule designated by the governor, Madam Chairman.
Designated by?
Excuse me?
Designated by what?
The governor. Sir.
Okay, are there any questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As we look at this new section, what's the impact on the fiscal note? I see a $20,000 fiscal note that goes per year from here on under the version G.
Senator Olson, since we've just gotten this CS, we haven't requested fiscal notes from RCA.
That's correct, Madam Chairman, and I believe there's some members from RCA online to testify.
Okay. Do you know who was supposed to testify?
I believe there were either Chairman Guyard or Mr. David Harbor. Madam Chair.
Okay, I'll find out. Are they on? Yeah, they're coming on now. Go ahead. Anything else?
No, ma'am.
Okay, this essentially does the $400 compensation for the members of AHFC, and then increases or leaves the designation of the Regulatory Commission to the governor. Oh, then Kate Guyard is on. Kate, would you like to join us this morning and give your name and what's your position and your testimony?
Yes, Ms. Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Kate Guyard, and I'm the chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
Did you want to testify on this bill, Kate?
Yes, thank you. The bill that you have before you as a committee substitute reflects a change in the compensation level for RCA commissioners, and to answer one of the senator's questions, the increase at the bottom would have a fiscal impact of approximately $170,000 for the four commissioners. I did not create a fiscal impact for the compensation of the chairman, which would be established by the governor. The purpose, from my perspective, of increasing the compensation for commissioners is to provide the legislature and the governor with a far broader range of options when selecting commissioners for the RCA. I have a brief term, a four-year term, and I started with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska in June of 2003 on the heels of the 2003 Sunset Review. And I, my period of office terminates on March 1 of 2007 in the middle of the next Sunset Review, which will start in January. So what I have tried to do, or what I thought my vision would be for the agency while I was assigned to this position of commissioner and chair, was to position the agency to move forward into the future and provide you and the governor with the benefit of the best advice that I could to do that. And one of the challenges you have is finding commissioners who are willing to serve for the full term of 6 years, and finding the commissioners that will work very hard and that will reflect, I think, the maturity and business experience and well-rounded experience that you would want in a commissioner base, because the decisions they make have long-term fiscal impact on the state of Alaska. And so one of the initiatives that I began a few years ago, and I took it out to the public this year, was what should the commission level for commissioners be? Because as a recruitment tool, it's very important. Currently, commissioners make $86,000 a year. I believe that department-level commissioners with various departments within the state government earn approximately $124,000, $125,000 a year. So to recruit someone for these positions, you're really at a base-level salary for an executive or even for a commissioner within the state government. What this bill does is it establishes salaries for the commissioners at the level that department-level commissioners are set for the state government. And it allows the salary for the commissioner, for the chairman, to be established by the governor. And I'm available for questions.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chairman?
Senator Stedman.
Are we going to get updated fiscal notes before we deal with this?
Did you hear her give the $170,000?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure. Senator Olson.
On that point, was $170,000 per year?
Through the chair, Senator, yes. In fact, it is $170,000 increase.
Per year. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I think there's several other boards and commissions that were brought up at the last time this bill was heard.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue is broader than just the subject matter in this bill, and may should be addressed at a future date.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Okay. Are there any other testimony? Any other questions? Okay. We'll set this aside for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
is on House Bill 338 in Representative Chenault's office. Come forward. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Could you get that microphone a little bit closer to you, please?
Is that better? For the record, Delania Snyder, staff to Representative Chenault. HB 338 is designed to tighten up current Alaska statutes. Right now, the Department of Labor has the authority to issue a license known as a Certificate of Fitness to explosive handlers in Alaska. And these handlers are required to submit to a criminal background check within Alaska. However, this check does not require fingerprints to verify proper identification and does not capture criminal acts the applicant may have committed in other states.
I'm still not able to understand you. Yeah, I think you still need to pull the microphone a little bit closer.
Okay.
Thank you.
HB 338 would give the Departments of Labor and Public Safety the authority to perform a fingerprint-based nationwide criminal history search to better ensure the safety of Alaskans. Madam Chair, I'm not sure if you heard me earlier currently that there's not a national criminal background search, so this would just ensure that.
As I understand it, this conforms Alaska's statute to federal law. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. That's correct.
Exactly who would this apply to? Who are explosive handlers? Where might I find one?
If I can request Gray Mitchell come to the table.
What's that?
Can we have Gray Mitchell come up to the
table? Oh, yes, please.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
In Rock Pits.
In Rock Pits, yeah. I thought so. I kept trying to visualize where were we.
The Juno accent.
In the yellow pages, huh? Yeah. Hi, Gray. How are you? Go ahead and give your name and who you
yes,
represent.
Yes, for the record, my name is Gray Mitchell. I'm the Director of the Labor Standards and Safety Division at Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Mm-hmm. And the answer to the question is that any explosive handler that works in construction, basically in road construction or rock pits, those kinds of things, is subject to these requirements in general. Okay. It doesn't apply to employees that are covered under federal jurisdiction, such as the Mine Safety and Health Administration, so miners are excluded from this provision.
Okay. Any questions?
Madam Chairman?
Yes, sir.
If I could, maybe they could give us a brief explanation of the licensing the powder monkeys have to go through to have their certificate, powdermen, which mm-hmm. is what this bill addresses. There is a licensing procedure.
Great.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the question.
I think there's a licensing procedure that powdermen have to go through to be authorized to handle these products.
Through the
Maybe
chair.
You could give us a little update on that. And
sure. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, there is a licensing process. It basically requires the applicant to provide us with their name, address, any physical disabilities that they might have, their employment history. It requires them to undergo an examination where they're tested on explosive handling safety procedures and their knowledge of explosives in general. And then they're issued a license if they pass that examination for a period of 3 years.
Anything else?
No, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Mitchell, I found it interesting that the miners are excluded from this. What's the reason for it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson. The reason is the state doesn't have jurisdiction over the workers that are covered by the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration. And so the statute specifically excludes those workers. You know, at the time that this certification requirement was established, I'm sure that those jurisdictional issues were raised, and so the statute was narrowed to only cover those workers that the state has jurisdiction over.
Madam Chairman, and does the Alaska Miners Association have a stand on this bill?
I'm not aware of a stand, pro or con.
And they're for sure not against it.
We haven't received any feedback from them.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we did receive a letter. Originally, miners were included in the bill. They were against the bill. Miners were removed from the bill, and I believe the Miners Association is...
Remove their objection.
Right. Correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Is there anyone else to testify? Tom, you're just watching. Okay, very good. Are there any other questions about this legislation? I know it was explained to me that it was to bring it in conformity with the federal regs. Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 338 from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
With there being no objection, House Bill 338 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Physical. Thank you very much. Okay. House Bill 83, Seismic Hazard Safety Commission. And for the record, Rod Kambalek is online to answer questions.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Suzanne Hancock, staff to Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, and before you is, I believe, an amendment Senator Wilkins.
Okay, and you want to just kind of give us a description of the bill, and then we'll...
All right. This act extends the life of the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission until June 30th of 2012. This commission is composed of 11 members appointed by the governor for terms of 3 years, and it's under the Department of Natural Resources. It increases the original commission from 9 members to 11, so there will be more representation from local government. And there is support for the commission not only from the scientific community, but also from the insurance industry.
Okay, Representative Ledoux, welcome.
Thank you.
Would you like to add to the remarks?
I think that my aide has pretty much covered it.
Okay, very good. Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move amendment number 1.
I'll object for explanation.
Madam Chair, in Senate State Affairs, they added some definitional language. When it came out of there, DNR took a look at that language and thought that perhaps it was too broad, and we needed to pull it back to the original language. And that is the amendment to do that. And I understand DNR and the bill sponsor are in agreement with this. And with that, I offer the amendment.
Okay, I'll remove my objection. Are there questions? Is there any objection to adopting amendment number 1? Amendment number 1 is adopted. Okay, is there any further explanation? Let's see, we have Rod Kambalek just answered questions. Did you have any further testimony you wanted to give?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. This is Roger Bellick. I'm Deputy Director of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, and also a member of the Commission. As well, DNR, through the Division's budget, administers this commission. With regard to the amendment, I wrote a brief explanation for that, and it's simply that, as Senator Wilkin explained, when the commission reread the amendment as put forth by the State Affairs Committee, we realized that it, in effect, brought the scope of the Seismic Hazard Safety Commission to basically include all geologic hazards, even those that were not seismically induced. And so this amendment, as proposed by Senator Wilkin, will refocus the commission's purview in the area of earthquake hazards. And as I understand as well, the bill itself expands the purview of the commission to include tsunami hazards, which we also believe is appropriate. You may note that the amendment removes volcanic eruptions from the purview of the commission. And we recommended that for several reasons, primarily because there is also an existing very effective body called the Alaska Volcano Observatory, in which the state of Alaska participates. It's one of the partner agencies through the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. And so we recommended that volcanoes be taken out of the definition for the Seismic Hazard Safety Commission so that we do not overlap the duties of that commission. DNR very strongly supports the commission as a whole and very much support its extension so that the commission can pursue the recommendations, the issues that it recommends that the state address through the commission's report that was issued last week, and all the members should have a copy of that report now. And I will take any further questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Kambelik? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Kambelik, could you just tell me how much communication there is between the Alaska Volcano Observatory and the commission now?
There's considerable communication. For one, the state participation in the Alaska Volcano Observatory is through my agency, and so there's direct communication through me with the commission. For example, during the eruption of Augustine Volcano over the past few months, there was concern that of the potential for the volcano to generate a tsunami. And although we did not have extensive discussion of that issue within the commission, we did touch on the issue and recognize that it would be appropriately addressed through the Alaska Volcano Observatory.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rod, on page 2, line 4, paragraph 7, we speak of three members from the public. So eight of the 11 would have budgets that would pay for travel. Would it help recruit the public members if the state paid for travel as needed for these public members only? Do you think it's necessary?
Senator Wilkin, I'm not sure I understand your question. As I understand the bill now, the state pays for the travel. The money is available in the budget established for this commission to pay for the travel of all of the members. However, some of them, ones that are currently representing public agencies, tend to get their travel paid for by their agency.
So the fact it's not addressed in this bill doesn't preclude the travel of the public members being taken care of?
I believe that's correct. I think that toward the end of the bill, I haven't read this in a while, but the commission, I believe, has in its powers and duties, let's see, I don't recall where specifically state that, but as I understand it, I think we'd have to go back to the original bill, the original legislation that provides for the commission paying for the travel for all the members.
Okay. Thank you, Rod.
You mean it's an existing statute?
This is the Seismic Hazard Safety Commission exists in statute as a result of a bill that was passed in, I believe, 2002.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, there are any other information? There's also John Aho. Did you want to testify, John? John Aho?
Oh, yes, Madam Chairman. I didn't hear you. My name is John Aho. I am the current chair of the Seismic Hazard Safety Commission, and I think Rod has pretty well covered everything. The commission has been doing a lot of work recently, and we're really looking forward to an extension so we can continue on with our seismic risk mitigation activities, which we believe are extremely important to the state of Alaska. And I'm available for questions if there are any.
Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you. Senator Wilkin, you want to?
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 83 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Without any objection. House Bill 83 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Thank you.
At ease, please. What's that? Yes, we'll come back to order, and we're glad to see that Senator Bundy has joined the group today. We have everyone here, and we have before us Senate Bill 160. I think we're looking at version B. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and apologize for delaying the committee, but happy to report that the events in Anchorage, there are a lot of Alaskans who are happy that you all supported Senate Bill 218. May I ask Jane Alberts to join us at the table, who has worked with me on the Senate Bill 218. Do we have a CS we need to move?
Oh, we do. Senator Bundy, would you move version B, please?
Yeah, I would move that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 160, I'll keep wanting to say 218, 160 as our working document.
Again, I'll object for explanation.
Okay, and thank you for bringing this back. Let me cover a few brief points. Have Jane and I available for details. And we've had a full year of a program that's recently passed on a pilot program on this procurement project. One lesson learned, we can get the most benefit out of this technology and expertise by retaining the senior procurement specialists for specialty items, gears for engine and the ferries, while the electronic commerce would probably be best suited for the more mundane things, a case of paper, that sort of thing. So under this CS, a private contractor would be limited primarily to the purchase of goods under $50,000. Under this bill, procurements over 50 and most contracts for services would be handled by the state procurement personnel. The expansion here is horizontal across small repetitive aspects of purchasing rather than vertical, which includes services, contracting, and large procurement. The benefit of this change is that it respects and retains the institutional knowledge of trained specialists, state procurement officers, and it also allows private contractors who now specialize in repetitive operations that lend themselves best to automation and productivity management. This change is based on a consensus between administration and private contractors. Seems a sensible way forward, and I would encourage that we use the learning experience we had in this past year and move forward to continue to use this expertise to the benefit of the state.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Are there any questions of the sponsor? Jane, did you have anything to add?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jane Alberts. I'm staff to Senator Bundy. And I think that he did hit most of the high points. One thing I wanted to add is that under this new CS, there was a concern last year from some of the state employees that if only we were given the e-commerce tools to use, we could also show the same kind of savings. And under this bill, each individual department can decide if they want to contract for both labor aspects and e-commerce tools from the private contractor, or just go and pay a licensing fee, as you will, for the e-commerce tools and actually retain the state employees to conduct those procurements. And then under the CS, then the OMB, Office of Management and Budget, would be able to compare both units of people using the same e-commerce tools.
And Madam Chairman, I point out something that I inferred, but I didn't specifically mention, and that this bill extends the pilot program exemptions from some elements of procurement code for another 3 years.
Another 3 years. Okay. Very good. Does someone have questions? Senator Olson.
I do, Madam Chairman. Going back to that, the sunset that's due on June 30, 2006, you're saying it's extended now to 2010?
Madam Chair, it extends the exemption from procurement code rules for 3 years to July 1, 2009. After that, then, any procurement service under this bill needs to be fully compliant with the procurement codes.
Okay, just on page four, the very last line.
This is, Madam Chairman, I'm not sure what that means.
Would you explain that, Senator Bundy? Go to the, yeah, it says sections 2 and 3 of this act take effect July 1, 2006. And then.
This is section backslash B?
Yeah. In order, because this is a pilot program, in order for it to get up and running and to be able to take advantage of the e-commerce provisions, we did exempt them from some portions of the procurement code, and that exemption will expire.
Okay, very good.
That's the issue I wanted to point out.
Senator Olson.
And what is that supposed? What effect is that going to have on the estimated savings that were there?
Well, I'm not sure we have an answer to that, Jane.
Through the chair, I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. However, we do have I believe someone online who might be able to explain a little better.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Scott Hawkins is online, and he may. I don't know if there. That the stopping of the exemptions are going to have a negative impact, but perhaps Scott can help us.
I'm not sure that's the question. I think the question is, what impact having exemptions now, is that not correct, will have on. The savings anticipated, the larger items, the specialist retained in state service. I think that's what Senator Olson, has that been broken out in any of the
Well, let's check with Scott, but I don't believe so.
Okay, Scott, welcome. Did you understand the question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Hawkins, President of Alaska Supply Chain Integrators. The effects on savings, that's one of the things that the three-year period will tell us. Data from Department of Transportation and Public Facilities tell us that about 93-94% of all transactions are under $5,000. So the exemptions will streamline really a small share of the transaction. But the reasons are for exempting are more technical than relating to cost savings. They have to do with things like just, you know, technical compliance issues and what are the implications for having a private contractor as an agent of the state, and how do some of these elements of the procurement code apply to a private agent of the state. Those are just technical issues that we feel we need a little bit, we in the administration will need some time to work through, and this extension gives us adequate time to do that.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, it's a vague answer to it. I just remember the comments being made during the earlier hearings that initially the pilot program was supposed to save between $5 and $20 million, and I don't think they've quite reached that objective. And I wasn't sure if this had an effect on that as well.
Okay, did you hear that, Scott?
Yes, I did, Madam Chair. I think, you know, in all honesty, the pilot procurement program has been so small that its opportunity for savings don't nearly reach that $5 to $20 million range. My recollection is that range was a potential range in the future if the program were expanded to all departments.
The last question I have, Madam Chairman, so far as the pilot program has gone on and we're looking at an extension of the sunset, has there indeed been any savings?
His question was, have there indeed been any savings?
Is that directed to me, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, there have been, Senator Olson. The savings that are documented are on the order of about $187,000 for a two-year time frame, and that's on the overhead and operating costs of procurement warehouse operations. On cost of goods, there's no way to know because the program hasn't been implemented to a degree to where we've got reliable catalog data backbone to where we can come up with reliable measurements, as you might recall from the oversight hearing of March 24th.
Thank you very much. Jane, anything else to add at this time? We have some folks in the audience who have signed up to testify. Bruce Ludwig? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, my name is Bruce Ludwig, and I'm the business manager for the Alaska Public Employees Association, American Federation of Teachers. And we speak in opposition to SB 160. Several years ago, the legislature passed HB 257 as an experiment. And as you just heard, there was projected savings of $5 to $20 million. The only documented savings has been negative. Two independent audits were conducted. They showed that it cost the state at least $1 million a year because they bought and paid higher for goods than what the state purchasers did. And I think the final savings as far as the overhead was something like $53,000 when you took into account the contract modifications that occurred during the experiment. In short, I think that failed miserably. You're exempting the contractor from procurement rules, and the procurement rules are there to protect the citizens. They provide transparency in the process. They provide for competition. They provide for appeal procedures. Those aren't present here. And we ask that you sit on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, Bruce. Tom Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name's Tom Bryce. I'm representing the Public Employees Local 71 today. We're the guys, we're the blue-collar workers of the state of Alaska. We're the guys that have been using the current pilot project here in Southeast to a large extent. We're the foremen of airports, warehouses, We work in the Pioneers home. We run the highway stations. We're the guys driving the belly blades, snowplow trucks, that kind of stuff. I want to talk a little bit about the added about some of the stories that I've been hearing coming from the from the people that we represent as it relates to how this project's been implemented. For the most part, it's been a very complicated process that a lot of our folks generally do not have the time to use. What this has caused is a lot of our members to start using credit cards or other alternative means of purchasing, simply because trying to go through and follow the computer system, trying to place an order through the ASCII program is becoming very cumbersome and burdensome. Not only that, but then it also becomes a situation where you don't get the product that you need, you don't get the product that you ordered, or you don't get it in a timely manner. For instance, one of our foremen at a duty station ordered 50 light bulbs, fluorescent light bulbs for the shop. They started to come in one, two at a time over a period of 3 months. Folks would place orders for oil filters for front-end loaders. 3 months later, still no oil filters. These are just some of the problems that the implementation of the pilot project has been facing, and that does impact the services the state's able to provide the people of Alaska. I would just urge the members of the committee to take a second look at this piece of legislation and maybe not move it at this time. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Tom. Senator Duncan. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Duncan. I am currently the business manager for the Alaska State Employees Association. We represent, depending on what day it is, about 7,500 general government unit members. Many of them are involved, or many of the folks who would be impacted by this legislation are our members. I want to speak just very briefly on the legislation, Madam Chair, and at the outset, perhaps surprise you and let you know that I am opposed to the bill and the committee substitute. I would urge the committee not to move forward with the legislation for a number of reasons. Clearly, there is no indication that this is a cost savings of any kind. There was, as you know, the administration had done auditing of the program. It was questioned then by the private contractors whether that was objective, and so they agreed to have a third-party audit, McCunder Cottrell. I know on March 24th you had a chance to discuss that audit with them. Unfortunately, I was not notified of that hearing, so I was not able to be here, but I know you had an opportunity to discuss it with them and question the validity of their audit. I have reviewed the tapes of that meeting, and it's clear that the auditor from McCunder Cottrell, and I don't mean to be speaking for them, they can speak for themselves, recognized that it was not a valid sample and put that forward. He said they also recognized it was not a valid sample as it began the process, or they could not get a valid sample, went back to the state, went back to the SCI, and said, shall we proceed? And both entities, all three, the McCunder Cottrell, the state, and the private contractor, agreed they should go ahead to see what they could determine. What they determined was very interesting. There was a small savings in personnel cost. It approximated $50,000 a year over the life of the 2-year life of the contract for $100,000. That was the amount of the savings. It also indicated that there was a tremendous amount of increased cost in the cost of goods purchased. And that was about $1 million per year, or over $2 million. Let me restate that the auditor was very clear to this committee, and he was very clear to the public, that that was not a valid study, but it was a strong indicator of what was happening as you privatized procurement. And the strong indicator was saving minimal amount in wages, in salaries, but costing a whole lot as far as the cost of goods purchased, $1 million more a year. I can only believe with that strong indicator, when it was a pilot project in the Department of Transportation, Southeast Region, Marine Highways, that with a increased cost of $2 million, with that strong indicator, that if you expand it Beyond that, it will cost a whole lot more for the state. I don't believe it logical to expand and extend a program that has a strong indication from a third-party auditor, a third-party auditing firm who had no vested interest, that it did result in increased cost to the state of Alaska. And I would urge you not to expand the program or not to extend the program on the basis of that study. I would also say, urge you to be very careful in allowing any one who is procuring goods for the state of Alaska to bypass the state procurement code. I think that is very dangerous. It could cause tremendous problems in the future. The state procurement code was put together back in 1984 and 85 and 86 by a group of legislators, a Blue Ribbon Commission, who looked very carefully at what had happened in the past in the state with procurement and wanted to be sure that the interests of the state and the interests of the public were protected into the future. And the procurement code was put into place for that reason. And in my experience, both serving in this body and serving as commissioner of administration, it worked very well and has worked very well and will continue to work very well. And I would urge you not to allow anyone who is going to procure goods or services to bypass the state procurement code. There's a number of reasons not to move this legislation. Those are two very good ones. One, there is no indicator. Don't even consider it a valid study, but there is no indicator that it has saved any money. There's a strong indicator that it cost over $2 million, over $1 million a year more in the pilot project. And if you expand it into other areas, that increased cost can only expand. And secondly, there is no good public policy reason to bypass the state procurement code. For those reasons, I would urge the committee and members of this committee not to pass this legislation, not to expand and extend the privatization procurement. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Cheryl Frasco.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Cheryl Frasco, Office of Management and Budget. And while I don't represent any members of any organized group, I am here on behalf of a group that is held accountable for the management results that state government delivers. And we appreciate the time that you as a committee have spent investing in evaluating the procurement pilot and the varying opinions about the success or lack thereof. But we recognize that there are issues and challenges on both sides of the pilot, and personally I've spent a couple of years refereeing much of that as well. But we do believe that these are management tools that are good for government to deploy where it makes sense, and we think that this proposed CS is a good reflection of the lessons learned over the procurement pilot, and we do support what Senator Bundy has proposed in here as some recrafting of the pilot and deployment of the tools by which state government can be more efficient and, we believe, save dollars going forward. So with that, we do support the committee substitute, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Cheryl Frasca? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wish to testify? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just say in wrap up that change is threatening. We have seen dramatic changes from you and I using probably a two-party telephone line to cell phones that now do more than at least I could ever have imagined being done. And it's also, I think, fair to say that this pilot program, for any number of reasons, was at the minimum resisted, if not outrightly fought. And in spite of all that, I still think it has shown progress and promise. It is certainly time for the state to join what private enterprise has been doing for any number of years, and that is getting involved in e-commerce in, as far as procurement for efficiency and cost savings. So I recommend we go forward and
okay, but first let me withdraw my objection to the CS.
If I might, I would move that we move from committee Senate Bill 160 with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations, CS for Senate Bill 160.
Objection?
Object.
Senator Hoffman.
He's just being objectionable today.
Yes. Okay, I won't say anything more. Senator Olson.
I'd like to object as well. I guess a pilot program that's costing more than $1 million a year initially, where it was supposed to be saving, is almost counterintuitive as far as being able to go ahead and affect the procurement process. I guess initially when we were told that the $20 million mark, and all of a sudden we're kind of at the other end of the spectrum, I'm not sure what went wrong, but obviously those type of remarks or claims were not quite correct. So for that reason, I object as well.
Is there any other comment?
Oh, yes. Thanks, Madam Chairman. There's absolutely no proof that that $1 million wouldn't have been there if the old system had been in place, and it certainly would have, I think, cost the state at least the $50,000 that the people who worked 37 and a half hours a week would have produced. And I don't need to go into that old system, but I think it's that audit, but I think it's been pretty thoroughly debunked. So I don't believe that the change has brought out any additional costs. Costs go up whether there's change or not.
Okay. On the motion to pass Senate Bill 160 out of committee, will you call roll?
I just have one comment, I guess. As a businessman, I think that anyone would not approve this measure. And as a businessman making payroll, I think that the only sensible vote would be no.
Thank you.
Can I have a follow-up comment, Mr. Speaking as a businessman, I don't have any problem with going to the private sector. Many of my contracts that I could do myself, I could have higher employees in my corporations, certainly I contract out because it's cheaper to do that. However, when we see a follow-up study that was done by Macunda on February 28th of this year, I guess it draws my attention away and shows me that that indeed there is some validity in spite of the previous study that showed that it was had invalid fact variables in there. So with that, I object to this bill.
Again, on the motion to move Senate Bill 160 from committee, Robin, would you please call the roll?
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Wilkin?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
5 days.
So Senate Bill 160 moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal.
I have to acknowledge that I don't have as much union support as you do.
That's a Democratic bill, and I was voting Republican.
Yeah.
Thank you. We will gather again at 5 p.m. for the capital budget. And Senator Dyson.
Do you have some idea how long that meeting might run?
Ooh, I have no idea.
Until we're finished?
Huh?
Until we're finished.
Yes. No, I do not have. Hopefully not very long.
Like minutes and hours, not hours and days?
I would say hours.
Okay. Thank you.
Do I need to adjourn? What's that? Well, we will recess until 5 p.m.